Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
My new book, Diary of a Psychosis, is out. It's the most lively, devastating baseball bat to the throat takedown of what the public health establishment did in 2020 and beyond that you can imagine. It's my first book in 9 years, and you're going to love it. Check it out at diaryofcovid.com. And if you've already bought it, make sure also to visit diaryofcovid.com so you can claim your free bonuses, including my free companion volume, Collateral Damage, a collection of stories from real people who suffered under the restrictions. They weren't allowed to tell their stories at the time, but every one of them told me, "We just want to be heard." Check it all out at diaryofcovid.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Tom Woods Show. This is episode 2443, and I'm delighted to be joined by two very interesting people who are going to be talking about a very interesting topic. Scott Moorfield is a columnist at Town Hall. I think I got to know you through Twitter, probably. I've made a lot of acquaintances through Twitter. I follow you there. And Dan McCarthy, I've known pretty much forever. He's a vice president at the Intercollegiate Studies Institute and also the editor of Modern Age, the venerable conservative journal dating back to 1957. And we're, three of us, going to talk through the implications of Donald Trump more or less having wrapped up the GOP presidential nomination and some misgivings that we may have or concerns about what that means for the future. So, gentlemen, welcome and thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here, Dan.
All right. So, Scott, the thing is, I had heard my friend Steve Dace, who I think is a good guy. Nothing wrong with Steve Dace. He, like Ron DeSantis himself, took a lot of unjustified abuse over the course of these however many months. And, you know, like anybody, DeSantis has his flaws and areas where I disagree with him, but I don't think he deserved what he got in terms of the way so many people treated him. But anyway, so I thought Steve was raising some legitimate concerns about what it would mean for the Republican Party if Donald Trump got the nomination again. And then I read a number of your posts, and they seem to be echoing some of Steve's concerns and adding some of your own. So I wonder if we could start off by you laying out what you think the problems are. I know that, let's say, a normie watching this has all kinds of problems with Donald Trump. Those are not the ones that you and I might have, or even Dan might have. So what's the difficulty here? Is he unelectable, let's say? And if you wouldn't go that far, what at least are the difficulties, you would say, obstacles, maybe some of them self-imposed even, that he has to overcome?
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of us supported Trump in 2016 and 2020, obviously. So we weren't never Trumpers. And those are the kind of people you're talking about who had problems with him based on personality. They felt like Trump was too rough around the edges, degenerate, whatever. They would name all these things about Trump. And that was, we're not electing a pastor. I understand that. We're not electing somebody to be our Sunday school teacher. We're hiring a president. And so that really wasn't the issue so much. But this cycle, yeah, it was electability. It was, this guy has made himself unelectable, mainly because of January 6th, because of his actions around January 6th and after January 6th. And then the way that he picks fights with key people in key states, seemingly, namely Georgia, Arizona, and just basically making himself the most unpopular politician in this country. Biden really is second to him. And so we're basically nominating the one person in the country who is less popular than Joe Biden. And it just didn't seem like a smart move.
Well, I think the issue that I'd like to hear Dan talk about in particular is the matter of, if we look at the polls, you do see Trump ahead. But since he's more or less wrapped up the nomination, there are some polls that seem to indicate Biden ahead. So that's a little bit difficult. But beyond that is what the polling data says about the likelihood of people voting for Trump if he's convicted of anything. And then the numbers go way down, and then you have a problem. So Dan, what do you think about that and what Scott said?
Well, I think it's a hard case to make that Ron DeSantis or anyone else is more electable than Donald Trump. And in fact, most of the polling that was done during the lead up to the primaries, and of course, the primaries have been a bit of a anticlimax for everyone because it looks like Donald Trump is simply going to roll right to the nomination. In fact, the polls that said Donald Trump was going to have an easy trip to the nomination have turned out to be correct. Well, the same sort of polls had also been saying that Donald Trump was actually scoring better than Ron DeSantis when it comes to electability. What I think a lot of Republicans overlook, and this includes the supporters of Nikki Haley, as well as supporters of someone like Ron DeSantis, and those are very different candidates. But I think what conservatives in general don't like Donald Trump, but think that one of these other candidates is more electable, what they overlook are the liabilities that come with the Republican label. And the fact that any Republican who gets the nomination is going to be relentlessly demonized by the left-wing media. We saw that even a squish, even someone as not just moderate, but in fact liberal as Mitt Romney, when he got the Republican nomination in 2012, he was turned into someone who was supposed to be to the right of Attila the Hun. The left just was relentless against him. With Ron DeSantis, he had liabilities, difficulties connecting with voters. This was true in the Republican primaries. It would be true in spades, in excelsis, with a general election. So I think that the polls that say that he was doing worse against Biden than Trump was doing are probably correct. Now, I do think also, by the way, that Nikki Haley, despite polls showing her doing better against Biden than Trump does, I think those polls are misleading because right now, a lot of people, a lot of Democrats and independents, believe that Nikki Haley is, in fact, a kind of Democrat running in the Republican Party. And that's actually where the base of her support is coming from right now. You can see it in New Hampshire, for example. And the fact is, if she were to actually somehow get the Republican nomination, very quickly, she would be portrayed as the Republican in the race, not as a Democrat running as a Republican. And all of those squishy voters who right now kind of think that she's a nice thing, they would suddenly say, oh no, she's as bad as all the other Republicans. Look at her record in South Carolina. Look at the things she said about immigration, or at least half of the things she said. And they would go flying back to Joe Biden. Now, Tom, you ask about what happens if Donald Trump gets convicted in these many, many cases that are arrayed against him. And that's a bridge we're going to cross when we get to it. So I think that the American public will actually have to look very seriously at the misconduct of prosecutors like those in Georgia, for example, where there's some very corrupt goings on. I think that, in fact, this is the kind of battle that we should embrace on the right, because we want to call attention to the way in which prosecutors and the law itself have been weaponized by the left as a tool against conservatives. The left actually calls this lawfare. This is a dangerous weapon, and it might actually be enough to damage Donald Trump, perhaps even help Joe Biden get reelected. But it's something that conservatives, one way or the other, are going to have to address sooner rather than later, because this lawfare isn't just coming after Donald Trump, it's coming after all of us.
What about now within the Republican Party itself? There's something polarizing about Trump that's been very good for his brand, because you either love him or hate him. And if you love him, you're on fire for the guy. Whereas very, very few people loved Mitt Romney. Some people could respect him, maybe, but nobody really loved him. Nobody was going to go out in a snowstorm holding a sign for him. So he does have that going for him. But the polarizing, of course, does cut both ways, and also indeed within the Republican Party. So that is to say, if Mitt Romney gets the nomination in 2012, the old guard of the party, even if some of them preferred some other nominee, is going to rally to Mitt Romney, because what else are they going to do? Of course they're going to take him. Fair enough. Maybe he's bad on some things, but he's the Republican nominee. But with Trump, it's likely to be the case that more than usual, let's say a larger percentage than usual of Republicans might say, there are things about him that just mean I just can't vote at all. Now, do you think that's a legitimate concern, or am I being misled by the media?
Yeah, so I totally agree. If you look at these polls, the unfavorable versus favorable rating, so people like DeSantis, but too many people love Trump. So it's not that the people who voted for Trump don't like DeSantis. Like, neither constituency likes Haley, for instance. Both of those constituencies are not, there's no path for Haley, right? There's not going to be enough Never Trump or Democrats to make a difference for Haley. It's just that there's, you know, too many people love Trump that they're not going to budge no matter what while he's in the race, and they're not getting out. So I think what you've got is this extreme with Trump that right around, yeah, Trump's going to get 40-something percent, maybe 42, 43% of the vote. But that 20% right in the middle, they're not moving towards him at all. They're not even going to be persuadable because he's so unpopular and it's so baked in that, yes, you have the January 6th that we're going to hear about for the next year. But you also have these indictments that are going to play out, and he's going to be found guilty of something. And I mean, it would take a miracle, right? You're talking 91 indictments here, 91 separate charges. So he's going to be convicted of something. And yeah, we can point out that it's bogus, sure. We know that a certain percent of people who are convicted are innocent. We know that the justice system and the department is corrupt. And I agree with that. Most of these charges are ridiculous. I think he was his own worst enemy on some of them. But at the same time, most of them are ridiculous. But still, you're looking at a very real possibility that we're trying to run a convicted felon who's already super unpopular with suburban moms, with people that you have to win. So you've got to win Wisconsin. You got to win Georgia. You've got to win Arizona. You have to win all three of those. There's no room for error. I mean, you could trade Wisconsin for Michigan or Pennsylvania, but those are even less likely than Wisconsin. So you're running this guy. But if we had chosen DeSantis, for example, sure, they're going to demonize him, but you don't have that visceral hatred that people have against Trump. So you can sell DeSantis. And people, once they get to know the guy, they like him. I mean, look what he did in Florida. He basically decimated the Democrat Party in Florida. DeSantis, a guy that's ideologically right where we are and to the right of most people, is basically dragging Florida to the right. Has Trump done that? No. Ever since he won, we've seen nothing but loss after loss after loss. So, yeah, I think Republicans made a bad choice.
So I will say this does sound to me exactly like the message I get from the mainstream media. It's also exactly the message that we get from the Conservative Inc. publications. What's funny to me is that these same arguments, exactly the same arguments, used to be made against conventional conservatives by moderates and Rockefeller Republicans within the GOP. Anytime the GOP lost an election, it was always because, oh, it's too far to the right. Oh, you've got all these right-wing kooks. If only you didn't have them, if only you ran nice moderate candidates, then you'd win every time. Well, now this has shifted to say, oh, it's all about Donald Trump personally, and it's all his fault that the Republican Party, which, let's face it, has a lot of problems overall, is losing elections like the midterm where, first of all, Donald Trump wasn't president. Second, he wasn't on the ballot. The GOP had a lot of liabilities. Donald Trump is not the biggest of them. Let's put it that way. Now, I do not worry, as you do, Tom, that the Republican Party is excessively divided going into the 2024 election. Proof of this, by the way, is that even Governor Sununu in New Hampshire, who is a very anti-Trump kind of guy, very much opposed to Trump ideologically, has nevertheless said, when it comes down to Trump versus Biden, he's going to vote for Trump. That's very important. The fact is, negative partisanship is, in a general election, far more important than positive partisanship. And Scott's right here that Trump's negatives are going to be a serious issue, but so are Joe Biden's negatives. And in fact, most of the political science that's been done on U.S. presidential elections says that presidential elections are referenda on the party that's in power. Now, if that holds true, the 2024 election is not going to be a referendum on Donald Trump. It's going to be a referendum on Joe Biden. But I will admit that, of course, is a proposition that's going to be tested. It might turn out that Donald Trump is such a provocative individual that it winds up changing the usual dynamics of political science and making it actually about Trump rather than about Joe Biden. By the way, I'll also say that I think Scott is exactly right, that Trump should not be alienating the people he's defeated and the people who have opposed him within the Republican Party up to now. And that includes people like those who support John McCain in Arizona, and it includes supporters of Governor Brian Kemp in Georgia. Trump is going to need those votes. He's going to need those electoral votes from those states. He's going to need the voters who are able to deliver those states for the Republican column in the 2024 general election. So that certainly is a lesson that I think Donald Trump might find it a bitter pill to swallow, but if he wants to win, he'll have to do so.
Let me jump in for a second here, Scott. What are your concerns, Dan, about Donald Trump? Do you have any?
Mine?
Yes.
Well,
I'm turning the tables on you a little.
My main concern is that Donald Trump is so idiosyncratic that he could wind up doing something that changes our expectations about him, right? So I think up until now, Donald Trump has been reliably less interventionist than the neocons, that he's someone who actually has a fairly intuitive understanding of the need for diplomacy and getting out of endless wars or staying out of them in the first place in foreign policy. But Donald Trump will be getting into a much more dangerous and inflamed world situation in 2025 if he wins the 2024 election that he was getting into in 2017 when he first won the White House. And I don't know for certain that Donald Trump will be able to avoid some of the conflicts that are currently dragging down Joe Biden. So I think there is a risk there that Donald Trump could actually change his view. And instead of being a more restrained president, he could instead become one who decides to go into a much more combative mode than we've seen before. Now, all of that is, I think, unlikely, but it's a possibility that can't be ruled out. I do think, however, that having looked at the comprehensive failures that Joe Biden is delivering in foreign policy, more conflicts and more humiliation, that you have to take the chance with Donald Trump rather than stick with Joe Biden, where you know you're going to have forever wars and they're going to be wars that you constantly lose.
All right, Scott, I guess I let Dan talk twice in a row. So say what you want to say to what he said, then I want to turn the tables on you.
Yeah, Trump has to win, right? To whom much power is given, you have much responsibility, right? So he's getting this mantle, and if this is not some huge legal grift, then he's got to win. So he has to reach out to DeSantis supporters. He has to reach out to everybody he possibly can. And he also needs to have somebody in the VP slot who aligns with Trump's values, or the values that he says he believes. Not interventionism, fair trade, limited restricted immigration, right? If he picks Nikki Haley, then it's been a lie this whole time, right? Like, why would you pick somebody like that? Because the odds of this person, if Trump manages to win, which is highly unlikely, but if he manages to win, this person could very well be president. There's a really good shot of that. So I think that a lot of what he does between now and then, he has to, what I said on Twitter is he has to earn my vote and my support. I know that a lot of people feel the same way. So there's a lot of DeSantis supporters that are saying, we'll never vote for Trump. And you're right. Then they may come back, because when you're faced with that binary choice, unless RFK is polling really well, when you're faced with that binary choice, you're not going to pull the lever for Biden. So they may come back. But right now, I'm open to earning my vote. But then, Tom, and you may want to discuss this later, you have to convince me and others that a Trump term is genuinely going to be better long term over the next 4, 5, 6 years than a Biden term. And I know that sounds really crazy, but there are reasons, and we can maybe discuss them later, but there are reasons that that may not be the case. And it's sad that even has to be something that even comes to my mind, but there you go.
All right. Well, on that particular note, I mean, I guess we can talk all day about judges.
Yeah.
But for me, the issue of judges is really central, because that can help solidify the character of the country in some way, because some of these culture war issues can get decided by a judge or two. And that has a cascading effect on all of society. So we have that issue. In a way, it may be somewhat analogous to Pope Francis in the Catholic Church, that he can put his imprint on the Catholic Church simply by the personnel choices he makes. Because those bishops, like judges, are going to be there forever, barring some major scandal. And the cardinals he names are going to be the ones who, now this is where the analogy breaks down somewhat, are going to be the ones who choose the next pope. And it's very clear he's trying to leave his imprint. And so given the authority that judges and courts have in our society, that would be my concern about that. But on the other hand, and I know you're not arguing the worse the better, because
no.
I don't know that that works. I think it's the worse, but that would be my main concern. But on the other hand, if you get a Trump term that's ideologically murky and confused, and that, let's say, generates only ho-hum economic results, while meanwhile the whole culture and media are pounding away at him, that's not a formula for success 4 years from now. So it's not clear. But yet you feel like Joe Biden is, and the Democrats are absolutely without a doubt my mortal enemies. So it would be very, very hard for me to conclude,
right,
when all is said and done, that it would be a net benefit to have somebody other than the Republicans in there right now. And I'm leaving aside the minor parties. I mean, in a pure world, maybe there would be some value in talking about that. But at this moment, this is one of these times when every 4 years we get the old lecture about this is the most important election of our lifetime, so therefore you can't throw your vote away on so-and-so. So in other words, you can never, ever vote for anybody other than the two. And so the two stay very much entrenched. But the fact is, in 2024, maybe it is. You know, maybe this is the most significant election that we've had
so far.
So let me ask you, Scott, after I've thrown out all those random thoughts, what do you think Trump's unique strengths are that maybe other candidates don't have? Do you think he has any?
He's an entertainer and he's a persuader. He's somebody who's fun to watch. He's fun to, I mean, he's always been fun to watch for me. I know he grates on some people, but I enjoy watching him. I enjoy watching his speeches. He inspires a love and a dedication in people that is really unmatched in my lifetime. I've never seen anything like it. So it's super impressive that he can get in there, and assuming that he's not going to have the cognitive decline, because the Trump right now is not the Trump of 2016. And you can start to see that in the gaffes and some of the things that he says. And he's really, those issues were why I fell in love with him in 2016, that he's good on the main issues. So I don't care really if a president is pro-life or not. I'm pro-life, but at the same time, the president is not going to do a whole lot about that. But the fact that somebody comes along who is anti-interventionism and wants to build a wall and wants fair trade, who talks about that stuff? That's how he won the blue wall. That's how he busted the blue wall. So I give him all the credit in the world for that, because I didn't think, and I knew Cruz wasn't going to win Wisconsin at all in 2016. So yeah, I give Trump all the credit in the world for the good things he's done. But he's also very susceptible to flattery. He's very much wants to be liked. He's going to be wanting to save his own skin. So the fact that, as far as the judges, yeah, that Tom, I mean, that's a really crucial thing, and I get it. But I mean, the question would be, can Thomas and Alito hold on for 4 more years? If Trump wins, they have to retire, because a Republican's not winning after Trump. But if they can hold on for 4 years, we're either going to win in 2024 or we're going to win in 2028, but we're not going to win both.
Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Persist SEO. If you are getting buried by your competition online, then build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO. If you are a small local business trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, then increase your visibility with Persist SEO. What if you have low or no leads coming in on a consistent basis? Well, then website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model for you. Are you tired of cold calling and networking, meeting places getting shut down? Use your website as a lead generation engine. Or what if you're not showing up for your services in the search engines? Well, get found with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. Dan, what do you think about something that Scott said earlier about Trump's VP pick? What do you think? I mean, we can all speculate. We can all sit here and say, I hope he picks X and I hope he doesn't choose Y. But let's abstract from this a bit and say, what is the kind of thinking that ought to go into this kind of decision? You know, you and I had dinner not too long ago, and I was saying that the usual way you pick a VP candidate is through sheer political calculation. Maybe there's some state that could go either way, but if that state's person is on the ticket with you, that might bring it in your direction, or maybe there's a candidate who appeals to a demographic you don't appeal to. I wonder if maybe there's another way that Trump ought to be thinking about this choice.
Yeah, I agree with Scott that it's extremely important, in part because I disagree with Scott about the prospects for winning both in 24 and in 28. If, in fact, Scott's analysis is incorrect, and Americans are sufficiently repulsed by the Joe Biden record that they elected Donald Trump in 2024, I think there's a very good chance that they would want to elect another Republican, someone who's his running mate, in 2028 as well. I think that you would have possibly enough success on the part of the Trump administration that you would have effectively enough momentum for a second term. And since Trump can't run for that, his vice president would get that. By the way, if not for COVID, I think there's a very good chance, in fact, an excellent one, that Donald Trump would have been reelected in 2020. I mean, really, I think COVID, the economic crisis that it brought on, and the changes to the electoral system that it opened the door to, I think all of that is what caused Donald Trump to lose in 2020, as opposed to Donald Trump's already quite provocative personality at that time. People would have reelected him if the economy had been in the state that it was in January of 2020, and if not for COVID. In terms of how to think about the vice presidential pick, I was actually in a discussion just last week with some friends who were saying, well, it doesn't really matter. He should just pick whoever is going to help him win the 2024 election. And they were relatively calm about the possibility of a bad vice presidential pick, someone who might be a neocon, probably not Nikki Haley. I think there's a lot of reasons to think that's a trial balloon that is not really going anywhere. But there are a lot of other bad possibilities out there. And we should be genuinely concerned about that, because Mike Pence's office was able to sabotage a lot of our people internally, was, I think, responsible for a lot of leaks in the Donald Trump administration in 2016. So the possibility of having a good, effective Trump administration after 2024 will depend in part on a loyal vice president who is not doing the kinds of things that Mike Pence was doing. There's also this problem of succession is a real one. And if you have someone who is basically a neocon, even a loyal neocon, who then 4 years later in 2028 is the sort of heir apparent for the Republican nomination, you're going to have the same sort of disaster that we got with Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. We've seen how that works. That is not a situation we want to be in. And frankly, having the neocons reclaim power would negate almost all the value of having Donald Trump. Not the judges, but it would negate an awful lot of the other value of the changes that Trump has brought to the Republican Party. So I place a very high premium on the idea that the vice presidential pick should be someone who is actually good. I think Scott is exactly right. You need someone who actually is loyal to the ideas that Donald Trump says that he stands for. Now, that said, there is a level of tolerance I have for people who might not have great records on these issues, but who are now going to say that they, you know, are going to follow Trump and toe the line and be loyal. So it's a judgment call. And some of my friends were basically saying, oh, it doesn't matter, whoever it is, we'll vote for Trump one way or another. I actually think there is a line, and certainly Nikki Haley would be pretty close to that line, if not over it, where you shouldn't vote for the Trump ticket if he has a VP who is as bad as that. I don't think there's anyone else quite as bad as Nikki Haley in play right now, but there are actually some possibilities that should worry us. And it would worry us a lot if it wound up being the case that the vice president were to contradict Trump, were to take much more neocon or establishment policy views, and if Trump himself then started to reflect the views of his running mate. I think it's unlikely, but it's a risk we shouldn't rule out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then, can both of you suggest maybe a handful of people you'd be delighted to hear had been chosen?
Somebody mentioned the other day a J.D. Vance. I know in this day and age, two white males is very, that's a tough thing right now in the political environment we've got, but a J.D. Vance, somebody with J.D. Vance's philosophy and just take on issues would be fantastic. Kim Reynolds, somebody like that, somebody that would show unity. Trying to think of somebody from, if you were going to play the states, Brian Kemp would be a great running mate if you could convince him to run with you. But just because of that, but then you're getting back to the ideology stuff. So I don't know. I think J.D. Vance, maybe. That's the first person that comes to my mind.
I agree. J.D. Vance would be my top pick. My point of disagreement with my friends in this discussion I had last week was about Kerry Lake. Now, Kerry Lake is polarizing in many of the same ways that Donald Trump himself is. And my friends immediately thought, well, if Kerry Lake were to be the vice presidential nominee, Trump would certainly lose. I'm not so sure of that. I think she actually has the ability to win Arizona. She didn't win it in 2022, but I think you'd have a different circumstance in 2024. I'm not saying that Lake would be my first pick or would be my top tier necessarily, but I'd feel like that would be not necessarily such a bad pick either. And certainly my friends who ruled it out, I think, are mistaken. I think Vivek Ramaswamy doesn't have obvious electoral pull, but boy, it would be fantastic to see him debate Kamala Harris. Or even if Kamala Harris would not debate him, it would be just terrific to see the contrast between this young, very smart Vivek Ramaswamy on the campaign trail and the perpetually tongue-tied Kamala Harris. So Ramaswamy, you know, he has a lot of the same liabilities in terms of being controversial or being unorthodox that Trump has, but I think he also brings a lot of youthful energy to the ticket that would, for one thing, help to counterbalance claims that Trump is so old, but that also would really stir things up in an interesting way. Trump took a lot of risks in 2016. He said a lot of things on the campaign trail that any political professional would have told him he should never have said, including, you know, about foreign policy. And yet Trump said it anyway, and he wound up winning as a result of taking those risks. And Ramaswamy could be a risk that also high risk, but potentially high reward as well. So I think there's some good options out there. There are some, you know, I think a lot of sort of mid-tier Republicans are in play. So there is talk about someone like Tim Scott. There's talk about someone like Elise Stefanik from New York. Actually, today I saw a rumor about Lee Zeldin, former congressman from New York, who would be interesting for electoral dynamics. I think Zeldin did a good job leading the New York party in 2022. Ideological questions about those three and other possibilities would have to be examined very closely. And we'd want to see that they were willing to adopt Trump's point of view, or at least the views that Trump champions, as opposed to being more conventional Republicans.
Let me ask you about the future. Let's stipulate that Trump is victorious in 2024. What do you see plausibly as the potential pitfalls? Like, what could go wrong in a second Trump administration? But contrary-wise, what could go right in a second Trump administration? Perhaps things that could go right that didn't go so right the first time. And either of you can go first.
I think he's proven to be a horrible judge of character, right? So I don't expect him to all of a sudden just start hiring great people who just are dying to get in his administration. So all the competent people, the people who know what they're doing, and I'm not talking about the deep state, but a lot of these people are not going to go back for fear of getting fired or getting humiliated. So that's going to be an issue with hiring, with retaining, with just getting competent people. Because if you're going to do anything to the deep state, it really depends on the kind of people that you're able to bring in. So, I mean, we're going to see what Laura Loomer is press secretary. All right. So some of these, it's just, I don't know. I just can't see him being able to have a competent administration. It's just hard to imagine. So, and one of the big concerns, and I know this kind of just veers just a little, but I hope Dan's right. Like, I hope that we win in 2024 and follow that up with an amazing person in 2028. I hope that you're right. And I would love to eat that crow. It'll taste wonderful. But at the same time, it's really hard to imagine doing that when he has a record of in 2018 losing the House in 2020. Again, yeah, he should have won, but he lost. And we've seen declines in the governorships, in the Senate, in the House. Ever since Trump has had an influence, we've seen this decline. So I just don't see a track record of him really gathering together Republican, unless he can just really turn it around and in a massive way in a couple of years and make a case. The Senate map looks horrible for 2026. Even if we pull it off in this year, it looks horrible in 2026. So even if he wins, he's got 2 years of getting judges. That's it. And the House is very likely to be gone either way. So those are just some of the things that come to my mind when it comes to just Trump in a second term. But yeah.
Dan, I've been curious to get your thoughts on this exact issue, this argument that Trump has been responsible, it's said, for all these losses, governorships, off-year election, whatever. Well, how do you respond to that?
Well, look at the 1994 midterm elections, where Democrats suffered huge losses under Bill Clinton, and yet the mainstream media is, and not just the mainstream media, but even a lot of Republicans, surprisingly enough, celebrates Bill Clinton as a great success, a tremendously capable and competent architect of his party. You can look at the 2010 midterms and also the 2014 midterms under Barack Obama, where you had massive Democratic losses. They lose control of the House in 2010. They lose control of the Senate in 2014. By the way, the losses that Clinton suffered in 94 in the House and the losses that Obama suffered in 2010 in the House were much larger than the losses that Donald Trump suffered in the House in 2018. And yet the conventional wisdom is, oh, Donald Trump is toxic, is poisonous. He must be, you know, even if you like him in terms of his policies, you should really oppose him because he's just such a disaster for the Republican Party. Absolutely nobody says that about Bill Clinton and the Democrats. Absolutely no one says that about Barack Obama and the Democrats, despite the massive midterm losses that both of them suffered. And then, of course, there's George W. Bush. And he got lucky in the 2004 midterms. He was still a popular war president at that point. Well, sorry, 2004 was a general election. He was lucky even in the 2002 midterms, which was, you know, a year after 9/11, he was still seen as a popular kind of savior figure by a lot of Americans who were misguided and misled. But come 2006 on the midterms, you see an absolute wipeout of the Republican Party. And really, the damage that the Republican Party suffered in 2006 carries over into 2008. it's something that has still has a certain blessing to it, because what it's done is to completely discredit and ruin the Republican establishment as it existed at that time. But it was a massive, massive defeat. So Trump's record in terms of midterms is par for the course for post-Cold War American elections. And I don't think that anything that the Republican Party can do would be sufficient to change the destiny of 2026. I mean, as Scott mentions, there are some difficulties in terms of what the actual Senate races are, in terms of the Senate map, but also the pendulum keeps swinging. And I don't think Ron DeSantis would have any better shot at doing well in the 2026 midterms than Donald Trump will have. By the way, the analysis of 2020 is not quite correct. So in 2020, it's true, you get a massive Democratic turnout, which would basically, you know, switches the presidential election. It causes Biden to have this huge margins of winning that presidential election. But you also have the Republicans outperforming the polls in 2020 in the House and in the Senate. Remember that all that polling that said that the Republicans were going to lose so many seats in the Senate, there was going to be a total disaster. And in fact, on election night, we all said, hey, wait a minute, the party's actually done quite a bit better than anyone had expected. That's because Donald Trump, he energizes both sides. Democrats come out to vote against Donald Trump, but Republicans come out in much bigger numbers than they would for anyone else in order to support Donald Trump. I think you're going to see that effect again in 2024. But I agree, 2026 is going to be very tough, and that would be true no matter what. There is a flip side here, which is if Donald Trump is not successful in 2024, if Joe Biden does get reelected this year, then the Democrats are going to have massive wipeouts, I think, come 2026. Joe Biden is decrepit. He is a weak president. He's been a weak president for 4 years. He's not going to be any stronger in 2026. I think, you know, the future for Republicans would actually be quite bright with a very weak Joe Biden in office from 2025 onwards. Of course, the judges would be horrible. We'd continue to have the disasters that we have currently in foreign policy, plus a whole host of other problems. So it's still preferable to have Donald Trump, even if, in fact, that means the 2026 midterms are going to be very tough. But for all that I partly agree with Tom that, you know, this election is exceptionally important, there really is more to politics than just one presidential election, even this one. And midterms are always a thing unto themselves. They're countercyclical to the presidential elections. And there's a long-term battle that conservatives are going to be fighting no matter what happens in November of this year.
Scott, thoughts?
Yeah, it kind of comes down to, I guess, what the preference is. Would you rather have Donald Trump in office and lose the House and the Senate? And there's an argument there. There's a strong argument there. So like you said, you make a good case there. I understand what you're saying. And it's valid that most of the time the president is not going to do great in midterms. So, but if you were able to start off in 2028 and maybe hold serve a little in the courts and maybe nobody major retires, you're able to hang on to the Senate and get the House in 2026, and then really win the White House in 2028, would that be better long term? I guess that's the argument. I don't know what it is. It's a hard call to make. Like you said, it's a debate that's easy to have.
Quick message from our sponsor, HelloFresh. Mealtimes sure can be stressful, can't they? It seems like you're always preparing a meal. Like no sooner have you prepared dinner than somehow it's already the next day and another dinner, and now you have to think of what are you going to have and scramble to figure out whether you have the ingredients on hand. And it's all very stressful and exhausting. Well, HelloFresh is going to bring convenience and deliciousness right to your door. Each HelloFresh box is packed with farm-fresh ingredients and everything arrives pre-portioned right to your doorstep for less hassle and less wasted food. And they have more options than ever, over 45 dinner options to choose from weekly. So just choose your meals and select your delivery date. HelloFresh handles the meal planning and shopping. So all you have to do is open your weekly box of pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes to get cooking. And for those nights when your schedule is packed, well, enjoy HelloFresh's lineup of quick and easy meals, including their 15-minute recipes designed to make mealtime a breeze. So many great dishes to choose from, like the Spanish one-pan chicken that we like, as well as some of our other favorites, like the shrimp and asparagus risotto and the rapid stir-fried beef. With HelloFresh, you'll save money, eat better, and cut way down on stress. We're talking fresh ingredients and chef-crafted recipes at a price you'll like, delivered right to your door. Go to HelloFresh.com/woodsfree and use code WOODSFREE, not just Woods, WOODSFREE, for free breakfast for life. One breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life at HelloFresh.com/WoodsFree with code WOODSFREE. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Well, as we wrap up, first of all, gentlemen, I'm going to have links on the show notes page. This is episode 2443, so TomWoods.com/2443, but also in the video description for people who might want to follow you a little bit more. Now, Dan, you have a New York Post column. It's more than just the New York Post, but that's where I read you. So I can link to that, link to Modern Age, modernagejournal.com. Scott, I can link to your town hall archive if you like.
Sure. Yeah, that and Twitter.
And Twitter, of course. Yeah, Twitter for everybody. I do that for everybody. But before we absolutely wrap up, is there anything that I don't want you to both to, either of you to walk away thinking, doggone it, I never had a chance to say such and such. Is there anything you want to say, get off your chest on this subject that we haven't hit on?
No, not really.
No, it was a great discussion. Unlike Twitter, it was very, we didn't have the same vitriol that you see on Twitter with, from some of the, it's been pretty heated the last few months. So it's nice to have a great discussion.
Well, you know, can I close with this? So I was thinking about the people I've seen in the Trump and DeSantis camps and the way they've interacted. Now, not all of them were like this, but a lot of them were. And they were really, really quite vicious to each other. And I feel like they're, yes, I understand. I would get told, well, this is politics. But, you know, for heaven's sake, this was unnecessarily nasty. I get maybe the candidates have to have their conflicts here and there, but there's no reason for the supporters to act the way they did. And so that's been disturbing to me. And people have said, well, that's just the way it has to be. That's politics. And I thought, well, Ron Paul wasn't like that. But then you could come back and say, Ron Paul didn't win. And then I suppose I have to hand that to you. But just seeing that there's no reason that a DeSantis supporter and a Trump supporter, that they have to be mortal enemies. No. And that the Trump people have to act like DeSantis wasn't their hero 6 months earlier. They were all cheering for him, everything he was doing down in Florida. If they weren't, I don't understand why. So I don't know. Like, that just rubbed me the wrong way. Again, I understand you're running in the primary. You're going to accentuate your differences. But there's no reason the supporters have to act like this, or why they couldn't just say, why more of them couldn't just say, look, I love Ron DeSantis and he's done a lot of great things that I support. But right now, this is Trump's moment and I really have to support him. What's so hard about that? The psychotic behavior was just bizarre to me.
It turned a lot of people off, at least they say now, for good. Who knows, that may not hold, but it's turned a lot of people off, just the outright mischaracterizations and lies about DeSantis supporters and about DeSantis himself. All of a sudden, he turned into a globalist neocon supported by Jeb Bush and Paul Ryan somehow. Like, what? While Lindsey Graham is doing speaking events with Trump. Like, what is this? So basically, MAGA is just, if you support Trump, you're MAGA and you are America first, and that's it. And it's just bizarre. So maybe we can come together.
Well, look, I mean, Tom, I have to say, I think you've ended on a bad note here because you just made it sound as if all the fault was on the part of the Trump supporters. And I see a lot of nastiness from the DeSantis people. It blew my mind because DeSantis supporters on Twitter and on social media, instead of focusing on the positives of their candidate, they tended to instead attack Trump and attack MAGA. They attacked Donald Trump supporters even. And this hasn't even stopped now that Donald Trump has been endorsed by Ron DeSantis. There are still some pretty prominent DeSantis supporters on Twitter, on social media, who are saying, oh, we're not going to vote for Donald Trump. I think that the DeSantis people, and unfortunately, I do know that some of this came from the campaign and the way that it structured its own social media project and the way they cultivated their influencers. I wish that DeSantis and his people had taken a higher road. Now, with Trump people, they're guilty as charged on a lot of the things you've said, but also you kind of knew from the beginning that that was going to be the way it was. Whereas DeSantis had an opportunity to kind of forge a different path here and to be a much more of a consensus candidate for the right, that is. And I think that the very vitriolic social media campaign that his both his official campaign, but also all the influencers behind him ran, that's damaged DeSantis for 2028. A lot of people are saying, well, this is a guy who, you know, he's just, you know, he wants to get revenge probably on people who supported Trump over DeSantis in the 2024 election. and the DeSantis people are unreconciled. They're not even supporting. I mean, apparently they think Joe Biden would be a better choice than Donald Trump. So there's a lot of reconciliation that needs to happen on both sides.
All right. So, but I'll say in my defense on this, if you recall, the attacks by Trump himself on DeSantis began, I don't know the exact month, but they went on for, it must have been at least 6 to 8 weeks before DeSantis said a word. Or he would respond obliquely if a reporter asked him. He would make a remark, never mentioning Trump's name. But he sat there and allowed himself to be called all kinds of things. And I thought, good for him taking the high road, refusing to take the bait that Trump wants him to take. Good for him.
Yeah.
And I think finally it got to a point where he said, it's not doing me any good. You would think it would. You would think there'd be some people saying, wow, he's getting relentlessly pummeled by a former U.S. president, and he's just sitting there taking it and carrying on anyway. Doesn't work, Dan, unfortunately. Apparently
no,
it doesn't.
Hold on. But you've switched the terms of the debate here. So we were talking about the online supporters of these candidates and whether all the harm was on the side of all the offense was on the side of the Trump people. And I challenged you on that. And perhaps that was the drift of the conversation rather than your intention. But nevertheless, I took that as being very one-sided. When it comes to the candidates, I agree with you. Candidates have to take the gloves off, and we shouldn't be surprised when they do it. Ron DeSantis ultimately did do it, but you're right. He had a lot of forbearance at the beginning. I even would say that, you know, someone like Marco Rubio, of whom I'm not a great fan, I think he showed a certain amount of manliness. He finally had enough of Donald Trump attacking him back in 2016, was willing to start to fight back. I actually respected Marco Rubio somewhat as a result of that. It didn't make me want to vote for him, but it made me say, okay, this guy actually does have a certain amount of self-respect that he is not willing to surrender. But I do think that, you know, the acrimony among online supporters has been intense from day one. It's been intense on both sides. And, you know, I'm not surprised that Team DeSantis didn't feel as if its online influencers were going to be able to be as forbearing as the candidate himself was. But I think there's a lot of lingering bad blood even now, which is why I make an issue of this. It's not because I have any qualms about DeSantis supporters who are saying, you had a fair race. Both candidates put a lot of energy into Iowa, and you see the results. And now we get to, you know, make our judgments about November. And for that matter, you know, even if there is someone who on strict principle finds Donald Trump unbearable for 2024, or who thinks pragmatically, and Scott's raised some interesting issues here, that for the long run, it's going to be better to put your resources in 2026 and 2028 and just write off the 2024 election. There's a case to be made for those things. And I think people who intelligently make those cases are right. But right now, I see a lot of hurt feelings on the part of both Trump and DeSantis supporters. It's bad for both sides. It's bad for the effort to win the 2024 election because there are some DeSantis supporters who want to remain aloof. But it's also going to be bad for 2028 for DeSantis. Well, I think, you know, he's a young man. He's got an excellent shot at having an opening for the future. But that's going to depend on being able to bridge the gap with some of these Trump people who, in some cases, did get out of line and did say things that were totally unjustified and that were below the belt. But it's going to be an effort of reconciliation, which, as Scott has said, we need to see Trump do this in Arizona. We need to see him do it in Georgia. And we also need to see, I think, the DeSantis people do it, even though their candidate has not been successful this year.
All right. Well, with that, we will, by the way, I take your response. I accept what you've said. I mean, I guess maybe it has to do with the people I'm following on Twitter, or I don't know what it is. That was my impression of the way it was happening among the influencers. But, and that's so funny, by the way, I have been accused repeatedly of being a hardcore supporter of both of these men when I'm actually legitimately trying to give a fair shake to everybody. I mean, I honest to goodness am. If you're going to go after somebody, get your facts right.
Yeah.
And I don't care who you are, and I don't care who the other, you know, look, the stupid thing about very fine people, that's a hoax.
Right.
Like, that's a stupid smear of Trump. And I don't, doesn't matter if I supported Trump or not. I just want to be an honest broker because I still don't feel, like, I wouldn't describe myself as a member of the Republican Party. I feel still quite alienated from it. And so I think that gives me a perspective from which I can say, well, this one's behaving well today. This one isn't. So anyway, let's see what the future holds. But thank you, gentlemen, both today for your thoughts on this very important matter.
Great to be here.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.